We're going to continue in 1 Samuel. If you want to turn to 1 Samuel 18. Today's lesson is God is sovereign over friendships. As we continue in 1 Samuel. Today we're going to see if we're to honor God in the friendships that He gives us, and we're to be committed to them. Because our friendships are ordained by God, we're to be, number one, loving in our friendships, persevering in our friendships, and loyal in our friendships. So today we're going to look at examples of each of these three main points in our text, and also talk about how that looks in our lives. So we don't want to just see how that looked back then, because it's going to look different today, but also how it looks in our lives. Okay, I want to talk to you about what it means that God is sovereign over our friendships, and that they are ordained by God. I stay at the top of your outline, because it is that idea that is driving our main three points. As we talk about God's sovereignty over our friendships, God's sovereignty in our lives, that is what drives our outline today. So what does it mean that we say that God is sovereign over friendships? Well, one author puts it this way. When we speak of God's sovereignty, we must talk about how there is absolutely nothing that happens in the universe that is outside of God's influence and authority. God's sovereignty is defined in the New Unger's Bible Dictionary like this. A term which has expressed the supreme rulership of God. This is rightly held to be not an attribute of God, but a prerogative based upon the perfections of the divine being. He is under no external restraint whatsoever. He is the supreme dispenser of all events. God is our creator. He has the authority to ordain or to establish for us who our friends are, who they're going to be, and who He brings into our lives. Which means that He also knows the details of all of them, right? He'll know the challenges, He'll know the differences, He'll know the circumstances of all of them. And as we see today, He's working that out for years and years and years in the future, right? It's not something He's accomplishing just right then when you meet that person or even within the same couple of years. Although it's not likely that we'll face the same situations that we will see in our text today, we still have trials that we face, and how we respond to those is important as it relates to God. So because our friendships are ordained by God, we are to be, number one, loving in our friendships. Number one, loving in our friendships. 1 Samuel 18, 1 through 5 says this. Now it came about, when he had finished speaking to Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. Saul took him that day, and did not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David, because he loved him as himself. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt. So David went out wherever Saul sent him and prospered, and Saul set him over the men of war, and it was pleasing in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. So first of all, we'll see that our love for our friends should be committed. A on your outline there is our love for our friends should be committed. Since God has sovereignly chose whom we will be friends with according to His perfect plan for us, then we need to be loving towards them, right? Now, this can look different in a lot of ways, but either way, we need to be loving towards them. In our opening scene here in verse 1, our text says that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. Here we see where David meets Jonathan for the first time. It's possible that Jonathan was deeply impressed by David's complete trust in the Lord, as he moved quickly and bravely toward Goliath, as one commentator notes. But regardless of why Jonathan is drawn to David, we see that it is more than desire for a casual conversation as he starts to talk through this text. Carl Laney records in his commentary on this that here we see that the soul of Jonathan was literally knotted together to the soul of David. It was a relationship characterized by loyalty, love, personal devotion, and self-sacrifice. So when something is knotted together, I think about how when you do that for a reason, right? You don't usually take something, not two things together and say, man, tomorrow, my goal is to get this apart, right? My goal is to work and stress over getting this apart. When you knot something together, it's for a purpose. It's for a reason. When David and Jonathan were knotted together, it was for a reason, right? Usually you have to make an intentional effort to break that apart. It's not something you can just walk up and break apart. Our text states two times in the first three verses, that in verse 1 and verse 3, that Jonathan loved David as himself. So we're going to look at some ways that Jonathan shows that. Some ways that Jonathan demonstrates being loving in his friendship with David. We know from verse 3 that Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. We know that this is a covenant of friendship. And we're going to see later on in our lesson two examples of how Jonathan was faithful to David, even in the midst of challenging circumstances in chapters 19 and 20. Jonathan demonstrated his love for David by committing to a friendship that will later put him in some difficult circumstances. Not only A, our love for our friends should be committed, but B, our love for our friends should be sacrificial. Our love for our friends should be sacrificial. Jonathan also showed his love sacrificially. He demonstrated his love for David not only by words, but also by action. Verse 4 records that Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt. Now, this is more than just letting David borrow some of his clothes, right, from the closet. It's more than just, I'll give you something for overnight. John MacArthur describes it like this: Jonathan willingly and subserviently relinquished, in other words, Jonathan willingly gave up the outer garments and instruments that signified his position as Prince of Israel and heir to the throne. Jonathan, a godly worshiper of Yahweh, quickly discerned that David was God's anointed and without reservation offered the robe of succession to the true king of Israel. So Jonathan didn't even hesitate to clothe David with the clothes that defined him as King Saul's son, as the Prince of Israel, and as heir to the throne. And not only did Jonathan clothe David with his clothes, but with the clothes that were reserved for one who was in a special position. It wasn't just somebody that was supposed to be off the street, but for that special position as prince, as the king's son. He didn't get a pair of clothes that he saved for occasions like this when he came across someone who would need to borrow some of his less important garments. Instead, Jonathan gave David the very garments and armor that he was wearing right then. What a remarkable thing to do. As MacArthur mentioned his commentary on this, which we read a few minutes ago, that rather than being bitter or resentful towards David, Jonathan, who was a worshiper of Yahweh, the one true God, instead recognized that David was God's anointed and treated him in such a way that reflected that. Jonathan offered the robe of succession to the true king of Israel. Unquote. So Jonathan's love for David was sacrificial. So if we're to honor God in the friendships that he gives us, then we're to be committed to them. Because our friendships are ordained by God, we are to be loving in our friendships. We saw A, our love for our friends should be committed, and B, our love for our friends should be sacrificial. Now, probably today, it wouldn't be common for your best friend's dad to want to kill you, right? Probably not. I mean, I'm not going to see a show of hands of who that's happened to as a threatening way, but what are some ways that we're called to sacrifice for our friends today? What are some ways we're called to be committed to our friends today? Hold them accountable, good. Praying, thank you, yeah. What else? What's that? Yeah, help with physical needs, right? Yeah, good. So obviously it looks a little bit different, but we're still called today as Christians to be committed to our friends for the glory of God. So not only are we to be loving in our friendships, but because our friendships are ordained by God, we are also to be, number two, preservering in our friendships. Persevering in our friendships. So we're going to set the stage here before we directly tie into the text this point to stay with me here. So we'll get back to Jonathan and David in just a minute. Let's go ahead and continue reading in verse 6 of chapter 18. It says, "It happened as they were coming, when David returned from killing the Philistine, that the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul, with tambourines, with joy, and with musical instruments. The women sang as they played, and said, 'Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s.' Then Saul became very angry, for this saying displeased him, and he said, 'They have ascribed to David 10,000s, but to me they have ascribed thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom?' Saul looked at David with suspicion from that day on." Verse 10. "Now it came about on the next day that an evil spirit from God came mightily upon Saul, and he raved in the midst of the house while David was playing the harp with his hand, as usual, and a spear was in Saul's hand. Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I will pin David to the wall, but David escaped from his presence twice. So this is a song that Saul grew to hate because it exalted David over him. So what kind of challenge do you think that Jonathan and David might face, right? They just made this covenant. They made a covenant of friendship. They committed their souls to one another, and now you have this. Okay, first Saul's just angry with David, verse 8 says. It says, then Saul became very angry, for this displeased him. But notice verses 10 and 11 again. It says, it came about on the next day that an evil spirit from God came mightily upon Saul, and he raved in the midst of the house while David was playing the harp with his hand, as usual, and his spear was in Saul's hand. Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I will pin David to the wall. But David escaped from his presence twice. That sounds like a little bit of anger, right? However, though, in Saul's angry pursuit of David, he realizes something, and it causes some challenges for Saul. We're going to read verse 12, pick up there real quick. It says, now Saul was afraid of David, for the Lord was with him, but had departed from Saul. Therefore, Saul removed him from his presence and appointed him as his commander of 1,000. And he went out and came in before the people. David was prospering in all his ways, for the Lord was with him. When Saul saw that he was prospering greatly, he dreaded him. But all Israel and Judah loved David, and he went out and came in before them. So Saul realized that the Lord was with him, right? The Lord was with him. One commentator writes this, Saul, faced with the same conclusion reached by Jonathan in verses 1 through 4, reacted with fear. Saul, a man who viewed life with a human perspective rather than a divine one, could view David only as a personal threat rather than a blessing to Israel. So it's obvious at this point that Saul is not secretive about his hatred toward David, right? It's not something he's trying to hide. It's not something someone can't figure out. It's something that's definitely at the surface. And we're going to see several examples now in the rest of our passages where this is evident and where Saul tries to put David in situations that would put his life in danger in hopes that the result will be death. So Saul doesn't put David in these situations thinking, man, I want David to be exalted. I want David to look good. I want David to be the one that they praise. He puts him in these situations because he wants David dead, and he's very clear about that. So let's start with 1 Samuel 18:17. Moving on. 1 Samuel 18:17 says this, then Saul said to David, here is my older daughter Merib. I will give her to you as a wife. Only be a valiant man for me and fight the Lord's battles. For Saul thought, my hand shall not be against him, but let the hand of the Philistines be against him. So Saul knew that a phrase ending with fight the Lord's battle would be appealing to David. David was a warrior, right? That phrase was appealing to David. And we know from our text that Saul's intent was for David to be killed by the Philistines, which would not directly involve Saul because of his fear of David. He was afraid of David, but he still wanted him killed. He was now hoping to put him out on the battlefield and have that take care of it. Now we know that David did not marry Saul's daughter here. However, Saul gave him another chance. Let's read 1 Samuel 18:20 through 27, which says, now Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David. When they told Saul, the thing was agreeable to him. Saul thought, I will give her to him, that she may become a snare to him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Therefore, Saul said to David, for a second time, you may be my son-in-law today. Then Saul commanded his servants, speak to David secretly, saying, behold, the king delights in you, and all his servants love you. Now, therefore, become the king's son-in-law. Verse 23. So Saul's servants spoke these words to David, but David said, is it trivial in your sight to become the king's son-in-law, since I am a poor man and lightly esteemed? The servants of Saul reported to him according to these words which David spoke. Saul then said, thus you shall say to David, the king does not desire any dowry except 100 foreskins of the Philistines to take vengeance on the king's enemies. Now Saul planned to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. When his servants told David these words, it pleased David to become the king's son-in-law. Before the days had expired, David rose up and went, he and his men, and struck down 200 men among the Philistines. Then David brought their foreskins, and they gave them in full number to the king, that he might become the king's son-in-law. So Saul gave him his daughter for a wife. So it's obvious here again that Saul's intent is to try to lure David in and then put him in a direct line of danger to the Philistines, where death would be the result and victory would be the Philistines, right? Death would be the result of this. Victory would be the Philistines. And victory would ultimately be with who? Would be with Saul, because David would be dead. Saul here tries to paint another picture that David can't resist and make him an offer that David would want to pursue. That way David would end up dead. Verse 22 reads, "Then Saul commands his servants, speak to David secretly, saying, behold, the king delights in you, and all his servants love you. Now therefore become the king's son-in-law." And at first, when David doesn't accept the offer, then Saul again presents to David an additional offer that would again be appealing to him. Saul's price for David this time would show a great victory for David if he won, but of course Saul was hoping that because of the extent of the task and what was requested of David to have his daughter's hand in marriage, the result would be different, that David would be the one that would fall. At the end of verse 25, we see that Saul planned to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. So we know that David had victory, right? David's the one that had the victory. David defends the Philistines and did marry Saul's daughter. And Saul continued to fear David because the Lord was with him. And verse 29 says, "Thus Saul was David's enemy continually." So God is sovereign over friendships. He placed Jonathan, the king's son, and David, the future king, together at the beginning of our passage, and they made a covenant. They made a covenant of friendship, and definitely wasn't aware of the challenges they would face down the road. At this point, it would be easy for Jonathan to just walk away. Jonathan knows that there's going to be challenges. It'd be easy for him to say, "You know, I think my dad is kind of mad at you. It might be my best interest to call this off, right?" Might be easy for him to say that. However, their friendship was started because both of them had a love for God that was more than just words. And it was said back in 18:3 that the soul of Jonathan was knit together to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. So because our friendships are ordained by God, we're to be persevering in our friendships. And that word persevere means to continue. Did I give you number two yet? All right, sorry. That word persevere means to continue doing something or trying to do something even though it is difficult. It means to persist in a state, enterprise, or undertaking in spite of counter-influences, opposition, or discouragement. So let's look at Jonathan's response to all of this and see how he reacts to the challenges that he faces as it relates to him and David's friendship. So in chapter 19, Saul continues to make known his anger toward David and to reveal his desire to have him dead. Let's read chapter 19, verses 1 through 7. Chapter 19, verses 1 through 7 says, "Now Saul told Jonathan his son and all his servants to put David to death, but Jonathan, Saul's son, greatly delighted in David. So Jonathan told David, saying, Saul, my father, is seeking to put you to death. Now, therefore, please be on guard in the morning and stay in a secret place and hide yourself. Verse 3, I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak with my father about you. If I find out anything, then I will tell you. Then Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, do not let the king sin against his servant, David, since he has not sinned against you, and since his deeds have been very beneficial to you, for he took his life in his hand and struck the Philistine. And the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood by putting David to death without a cause?" Saul listened to the voice of Jonathan, and Saul vowed, "As the Lord lives, he shall not be put to death." Then Jonathan called David, and Jonathan told him all these words. And Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as formerly. So, because our friendships are ordained by God, we need to be persevering in them. A is we need to persevere faithfully. We need to persevere faithfully. So what was Jonathan's response? He didn't walk away, right? He didn't just say, that's it. He didn't say, times are tough. The covenant we made was before I knew my father was angry. Instead, Jonathan's response was, he was faithful to remember his covenant of friendship with David before the Lord, even over the anger of his father, right? And not only that, he spoke well of him. It's not that just he was quiet. It's not that he just decided, well, if I don't say anything at all, that's better. I can just kind of stay to the side, right? No, he spoke well of him. Verse 3 says, I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak with my father about you. If I find anything, then I will tell you. I like that, how Jonathan was faithful to go to King Saul and to speak to him about David, because, as we remember from chapter 18, Jonathan loved David as himself. So even though it was probably going to be hard, and even though he didn't know what the result was going to be, Jonathan faithfully persevered and followed through with talking to the king. Notice, though, not only do we need to persevere faithfully, we need to persevere when it's inconvenient. We need to persevere when it's inconvenient. You know, if you think of Jonathan's circumstances right now, they're not easy. You have a friend that you made a covenant with, and you have a dad that's angry. You have a dad with power. You have a dad that's the king. And it's not just that Saul was angry. The very man that Jonathan is going to defend happens to be the one that Saul wants to kill. Not just that he's angry, he wants to kill him. You know, by now Saul was hoping that David would have already been dead. Saul's tried to kill David himself. Saul's tried to have him killed on several occasions. He's tried to put David in situations where he would die, but God is faithfully protecting David, and Saul has now commanded Jonathan and his servants to take the necessary steps in taking David's life. So this is the situation for Jonathan. Jonathan's asked to take his friend's life. He's asked by the king. He's got two choices, right? He does it or he doesn't. He does it or he doesn't. Verses 4 through 7 are example of Jonathan's diligence, however. Verse 4 says that Jonathan speaks well of Saul, and then the next couple of verses are Jonathan reminding Saul of who David is. So most people right now wouldn't even want to go to the king about David. They probably want to say his name in their presence, in his presence. But because of Jonathan's faithfulness to David, he goes. And because Saul listens to David, it doesn't last very long, right? It doesn't mean that he doesn't pursue in the future. The short-term result, though, of Jonathan's faithfulness and perseverance is this. 1 Samuel 19:6, Saul listened to the voice of Jonathan, and Saul vowed, as the Lord lives, he shall not be put to death. He persevered faithfully, Jonathan did, and he also persevered when it was inconvenient. Isn't it neat, though, how God from the beginning was sovereign over that friendship? He's in a situation now where Jonathan has a chance to be able to preserve the king, preserve the future king through a friendship that God started because of his relationship to Saul. So if we're going to honor God in the friendships that he gives us, then we're to be committed to them. Because our friendships are ordained by God, we're to be, as we've already seen, number one, loving in our friendships, number two, persevering in our friendships, and also number three, loyal in our friendships. We're to be loyal in our friendships. So we'll spend the rest of our time here. The definition of loyalty is having or showing complete and constant support for someone or something. In the closing scene of our passage, we're going to see what loyalty in a friendship looks like. So just to summarize what we missed in chapter 19, in verses 8 through 10, David had fought the Philistines and defeated them again, and Saul became jealous of David again and tried to spear him, but David is able to slip away. In verses 11 through 17 of chapter 19, Saul goes looking for David at his home, but his wife had let him down through a window, and he escaped. And after that, in verses 18 to 24, at the end of the chapter, David had escaped to Ramah and came to Samuel and told him everything that was going on, and Samuel and David went and stayed in Naoth. Saul finds out where they are, and he goes looking for them, but is unsuccessful in bringing David back. So this is where we are. This is where we pick up. In verse 20, it says, David fled from Naoth and Ramah and came and said to Jonathan, what have I done? What is my sin before your father that he is seeking my life? So verses 2 and 4, 2 through 4 go on to say this. This is the answer. He said to him, "Far from it." Jonathan said, "Far from it. You shall not die. Behold, my father does nothing, either great or small, without disclosing it to me. So why should my father hide this thing from me? Is it not so?" Yet David vowed again, saying, "Your father knows well that I have found favor in your sight, and he has said, 'Do not let Jonathan know this, or he will be grieved.' But truly as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, there is hardly a step between me and death." Then Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you say, I will do for you. Whatever you say, I will do for you." So first of all, I want us to see that in order for there to be loyalty in our friendships, our loyalty should be genuine. Our loyalty should be genuine. So I like here how Jonathan was honestly willing to help out before he even knew what David wanted. Before David even spoke his needs, Jonathan again doesn't say, "Well, obviously with my father being the king and all, I just don't think that helping will work out." Or he doesn't say, "As long as I don't have to get near him, I'll help out. I'll help if I can be quiet and keep my distance." Instead of giving conditions for his help or laying down boundaries and guidelines, he genuinely listens to David and is willing to help in any way that he can. So in verses 5 through 11 of chapter 20, David presents his request to Jonathan. Let's go ahead and read chapter 20, 5 through 11. "So David said to Jonathan, 'Behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I have to sit down and eat with the king, but let me go, that I may hide myself in the field until the third evening. If your father misses me at all, then say, David earnestly asked leave of me to run to Bethlehem in his city, because it is the yearly sacrifice there for the whole family.'" Verse 7, "If he says it is good, your servant will be safe. But if he is very angry, know that he has decided on evil. Therefore, deal kindly with your servant, for you have brought your servant into a covenant of the Lord with you. But if there is iniquity in me, put me to death yourself. For why then should you bring me to your father?" Verse 9, Jonathan said, "Far be it from you. For if I should indeed learn that evil has been decided by my father to come upon you, then would I not tell you about it?" Then David said to Jonathan, "Who will tell me if your father answers you harshly?" Jonathan said to David, "Come, and let us go out into the field." So both of them went out into the field. So the new moon was on the first day of the month, and it was a sacrificial meal, and it was to be celebrated. Saul, being the son-in-law, would need to be there, right? Saul's son-in-law, David, would need to be there. Correction. Saul would be holding a day's celebration in which it would be important for him to be there as son-in-law, and David's request to Jonathan is that he would inform Saul instead of a family celebration that coincides at the same time. This would serve as a test of Saul's true feelings, because when he finds out that David's not there, he's going to react in one of two ways. He's going to be angry, or he's going to say okay, right? He's going to be okay with it. David then in verse 8 reminds Jonathan of their covenant. After the request, he says, "Therefore, deal kindly with your servant, for you have brought your servant into a covenant of the Lord with you." And David also asked Jonathan here to kill him if he was deserving of death because of any possible sin. David asked Jonathan in verse 10, "Who will tell me if your father answers you harshly?" And Jonathan answers him by saying, "Come and let us go out into the field." So, again, I like the loyalty here where Jonathan is willing before David even speaks to say, "Whatever it is, I will help you with. I will be loyal. I will be faithful. I will do as you need." So before we pick up in verse 12, we see again an example of how two people are using their God-ordained friendship to honor God. They were sovereignly brought together by Him and their desires to honor Him in it. God is using for His glory. God is using this for His glory, and He is working to continually preserve David as the future king. So let's look at Jonathan's response to David's plan, and let's read verses 12 through 23. We'll read the first few, and then we'll stop, starting in verse 12. "Then Jonathan said to David, 'The Lord, the God of Israel, be witness. When I have sounded out my father about this time tomorrow, or the third day, behold, if there is good feeling toward David, shall I not then send to you and make it known to you? If it please my father to do you harm, may the Lord do so to Jonathan, and more also, if I don't make it known to you and send you away that you may go in safety. And may the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. If I am still alive, will you not show me the loving kindness of the Lord that I may not die? You shall not cut off your loving kindness from my house forever, not even when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, may the Lord require it at the hands of David's enemies. Jonathan made David vow again because of his love for him, because he loved him as he loved his own life. We'll stop right there for a minute. In the middle of their conversation, Jonathan realizes that someday David would be Israel's king and asks for protection if he is still alive. When David takes the throne one day, Jonathan wanted to know that he and his family would be taken care of, because as Saul's son, that was a possible danger. In verse 16, Jonathan, as we read, made a covenant, though, with the house of David, saying, may the Lord require it at the hands of David's enemies, to what David said. John MacArthur writes on this and says, this covenant was not only binding on Jonathan and David, but also upon the descendants of each. Jonathan perceived that among David's adversaries, who would be cut off when he became king, was his own father, Saul. So in response to Jonathan's words, David solemnly pledged to fulfill the covenant between himself and Jonathan. So their friendship was a genuinely loyal friendship. It was genuinely loyal. Let's finish reading those next few verses. Pick up in verse 18 of 1 Samuel chapter 20. It says, then Jonathan said to him, tomorrow is the new moon, and you will be missed because your seat will be empty. When you have stayed for 3 days, you shall go down quickly and come to the place where you hid yourself on that eventful day, and you shall remain by the stone Ezel. I will shoot 3 arrows to the side as though I shot at a target. And behold, I will send the lad, saying, go, find the arrows. If I specifically say to the lad, behold, the arrows are on the side of you, get them, then come, for there is safety for you, and no harm as the Lord lives. Verse 22, But if I say to the youth, behold, the arrows are beyond you, go, for the Lord has sent you away. As for the agreement of which you and I have spoken, behold, the Lord is between you and me forever. So in verse 23, as for the agreement of which you and I have spoken, behold, the Lord is between you and forever. This means the Lord will punish or avenge any breach in the covenant as appropriate to which he has been a witness of. The covenant which was made here was not a careless set of words to just satisfy the moment. They were words that were meant to be and were taken serious forever. Just like their friendship, just like when their souls were knit together, this covenant was made to be forever. And then in verse 24, David hid in the field, and when the new moon came, the king sat down to eat food. The king sat on his seat as usual, the seat by the wall. Then Jonathan rose up, and Abner sat near by Saul's side. But David's place was empty. Nevertheless, Saul did not speak anything that day, for he thought, it is an accident, he is not clean. Surely he is not clean. It came about the next day, the second day of the new moon, that David's place was empty. So Saul said to Jonathan his son, why has the son of Jesse not come to the meal, either yesterday or today? In verse 28, Jonathan says, Jonathan then answered Saul, David earnestly asked leave to me to go to Bethlehem. For he said, please let me go, since our family has a sacrifice in the city, and my brother has commanded me to attend. And now if I have found favor in your sight, please let me get away that I may see my brothers. For this reason he has not come to the king's table. So Jonathan was loyal and asked loyal to David as he asked Saul. And Saul's assumption is what? That he was unclean. He thought he won't be there the first day. He's unclean. He can't attend. And therefore not able to participate on the meal. But the second day, when David's seat was empty, Saul wasn't passive about it that time. Saul wasn't just kind of like, okay, well, he's probably unclean again. No, in verse 27, Saul said to his son Jonathan, why has the son of Jesse not come to the meal, either yesterday or today? So now he's asking about both. And in verse 30, after he finds out what Jonathan said, Saul becomes angry. Verse 30 says, Saul's anger burned against Jonathan, and he said to him, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you are choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? Verse 31, For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Therefore now send and bring him to me, for he must surely die. But Jonathan answered Saul his father and said to him, Why should he be put to death? What has he done? Then Saul hurled his spear at him to strike him down. So Jonathan knew that his father had decided to put him to death. Then Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger and did not eat food on the second day of the new moon, for he was grieved over David because his father had dishonored him. So there's no doubt that Saul was angry. There's no doubt that Saul was just kind of like, okay, well, that makes sense. He was obviously angry over it. He was angry to a point where not just he was wanting to kill David, but he was even angry at Jonathan. So as you think about, again, their friendship at this point here and think about the loyalty that Jonathan has showed, pretty challenging circumstances, right? Now it's not just that his friend is in danger, it's that his own life is as well. Which leads us to our next subpoint, B on your outline there, is our loyalty should be unconditional. Our loyalty should be unconditional. Because our friendships are ordained by God, we are to be loyal in our friendships. Our loyalty should be genuine, and our loyalty should be unconditional. So Jonathan has made the king pretty mad, right? And as we talked about earlier, this would be a time again when it might be tempting to just get out or walk away. I mean, now your own father's trying to pin you, and you know now for sure that he wants at least David dead. But because of Jonathan's love for God, and because of his love for David, and because of his faithfulness to David and his loyalty to their covenant, Jonathan's loyalty remains genuine and is not conditional. Instead of siding with the king in the midst of these challenging circumstances, Jonathan remains faithful to David. And the text tells us that Jonathan got up in anger, for he was grieved over David because his father had dishonored him. His father had broke their previous oath and had decided to follow through with killing David. Jonathan's loyalty was unconditional. And we'll see how it ends here, how it unfolds in verses 35 through 42. Of chapter 20, 35 through 42 says this. Now it came about in the morning that Jonathan went out into the field for the appointment with David. And a little lad was with him. He said to his lad, Run, find now the arrows which I am about to shoot. As the lad was running, he shot an arrow past him. When the lad reached the place of the arrow which Jonathan had shot, Jonathan called after the lad and said, Is not the arrow beyond you? And Jonathan called after the lad, Hurry, be quick, do not stay. And Jonathan's lad picked up the arrow and came to his master. Verse 39, But the lad was not aware of anything. Only Jonathan and David knew about the matter. Then Jonathan gave his weapons to his lad and said to him, Go, bring them to the city. When the lad was gone, David rose from the south side and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times, and they kissed each other and wept together. But David wept the more. Verse 42 says, Jonathan said to David, Go in safety. Inasmuch as we have sworn to each other in the name of the Lord, saying, The Lord will be between me and you, and between my descendants and your descendants forever. Then he rose and departed, while Jonathan went into the city. What a story of God's sovereignty over friendships. From the very beginning, we knew that God was working it out for His glory. We knew that God had ordained this friendship for a purpose. We knew that God had chosen it to preserve David, to become king. And if you saw today that if we're to honor God in the friendships that He gives us, then we're to be committed to them. Because our friendships are ordained by God, we are to be, number one, loving in our friendships. Our love for our friends should be committed. Our love for our friends should be sacrificial. Number two, persevering in our friendships. We need to persevere faithfully. We need to persevere when it's inconvenient. And number three, we're to be loyal in our friendships. Our loyalty should be genuine, and our loyalty should be unconditional. And I am done a few minutes early, but we're going to pray because I have nothing else to say. So I could ramble for 10 minutes and talk about my family and kids, but all right, let's pray. Lord, we are so grateful for your word. We're grateful for the truth in it. We're grateful that you reveal it to us. We are grateful for the story today. and for the example we have. We thank you for the friendship of Jonathan and David, for the covenant, for the way you preserved the Israel's king, just for the way that we can see your sovereignty over our friendships and our lives today as well. Lord, I pray as we think about that, I pray as we think about the purpose of friendships and that honor and glorify you, that we be careful with them. I pray our desire will not be just to handle them carelessly, but to handle them intentionally. That, Lord, we would have a desire to encourage one another, that we would have a desire to build one another up, to challenge one another, to pray for one another. Lord, I pray that again in our lives, in that you would be glorified. We thank you so much for who you are, and we pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.